it's one of my favorite topics, and I love to talk about change. But first of all, let's talk about one of the big changes out there. I just wanted to give people an update on blitzes. A lot of you are doing blitzes now, and I sent out the blitz information last week in the tracker sheet, so hopefully I've even gotten some feedback from somebody out in the field about how you're using the tracker and you're having fun with it. And that's great. You know, start getting those packs out and get some feedback on how that whole thing is going with the Jeff Allen backpacks, as we call them. And I know I'm getting feedback from some of my people in my organization that are just doing terrific. I had one gal call me last week, and she signed up more people than she'd signed up in the last 3 months in 1 week. And I said, wow, okay, that must mean something. So that's kind of exciting. But the whole concept, the most important part of it to me, as I look at, again, back at the Jeff Allen, the whole approach, is it's totally duplicatable. And that's what makes it so simple and so easy to use, that it really is helpful for brand new people to make it easy and simple to get out there and share without making the complexities and requiring them to become biochemists in their first 3 months in Manatech, that they have to understand how the body's physiology works. Some of us have been in Manatech long enough and we've done so much research and scientific stuff. Oh my gosh, you know, I know more about the human body than I think I knew about law when I was practicing law for 20 years. I mean, that's how crazy it is how much I've researched and studied. But the incredible thing is that it's hard then sometimes for us to relate back to day one when we first stepped into this environment. If you didn't know much about human physiology when you first started, it was a little overwhelming. So the issue is, how do we make it so manageable that anybody can look at it and say, even I can do this? And that's the whole approach right there. I did get some feedback from some people in the field. One person wrote me an email and said, Mary Jo, I've been using the Jeff Allen approach for 6 weeks and it doesn't work. And so I had some communication with that person. Well, it turns out he was doing 100% of his business over the phone. Well, I don't know that if you're doing your business over the phone that the Jeff Allen approach is what you should be using in the first place. Because if you're doing cold phone, you know, phone calls, cold contacts, I don't know, how do you do a backpack? You send it out and you say, please mail it back. I mean, the whole concept of Jeff's approach is a one-on-one personal approach. It's people you meet, handing it over, and going and picking it up. So there's interface people to people. I would suspect that if you're doing cold calling, follow somebody's technique around cold calling. I've never had a great experience around cold calling, so I can't tell you what system to use because I've tried 10 different people out there and cold leads and all that stuff and never been effective with it. So I'm the last person, and I try desperately. I even stepped out and did a program about a year and a half ago. Some of you were involved in it, where we got just the most tremendous leads out there, and we had coaching and we had buddy system. We put everything together and it didn't work for us. So I can't support you on that because I don't know how it works. I have not found a mechanism that it works. But I would suggest that Jeff Allen's approach is not the right one with, you know, if you're out there buying leads and calling them on the phone. I don't think that's the technique you need to be using. I think you have to come up with a different approach because it really depends on what you're choosing to do. If you're doing one-on-one prospecting, you know, and face-to-face stuff, Jeff Allen's approach is terrific. So, all right, any other questions about that? Everybody else kicking off and going crazy with it? Good to hear, and get those packs ordered or put them together yourself or whatever you choose to put in them and run with the wind and see what happens with it for you. All right. Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, I don't know that you're going to get them back. I'm not sure I'm willing. If my prospecting is because I live in a small little town and I have to send something out that's 2 hours away or whatever, I'm not sure I'm putting $10 worth of material in a pack. I think you're going to dry up your expense account pretty fast. You got to do something more reasonable, that's just much more cost effective, and. You could do that, but I'm not sure that works. Okay, Carrie, you get half back, so you're talking about a 50% return when you do that. So, yep. So you got to decide what's most effective for you. And sometimes when I put things out, I might just, you know, it depends on what the person is. I like, personally, if you're dealing with somebody long, you know, a long way away, your most important thing that you can do is to have a longer conversation with them up front to really sort them. Because, you know, a lot of us, we'll just try to get somebody to ask for information. That's really what the Jeff Allen approach is. We're not trying to find out if they're really serious or not serious. We're just trying to find out if they're interested in looking at something. That's the Jeff Allen approach. But if you do that with somebody 2 hours away, you're going to be sending willy-nilly a lot of materials out to people that maybe they just don't have quite the seriousness about what they want to look at or what's going on in their lives. So I'm going to suggest to you, when you start sending packs out in the mail, 2 hours, 5 hours, 10 hours, wherever, that you do that upfront sorting with the person to make sure they have a level of seriousness around really wanting to learn and do something different in their lives, versus somebody that's just gonna, you know, kind of doing it to please you. Do you follow me, people? Find their core reason for wanting to look at the material. And that's gonna take just a little bit more conversation up front than it would with the Jeff Allen approach. Okay? Uh-huh. Boy, that would scare me away. If I were the prospect, you know what I would say? Don't bother sending it. That would absolutely in fact, that's what, because I say the same thing to these guys that call me and say, oh, we just want to send you this free information, and if you don't send it back, you'll start being billed 30 days later. I don't let anyone, anytime, anywhere, ever do that to me, because my life is so busy, I'd be afraid I'd miss the date. I don't want anyone putting a responsibility on me I'm not willing to absorb. So I just suggest to you, I think that technique would scare people. No, I wouldn't give my credit card to somebody I didn't know either, you know. Yeah, Oh, no question, because you'll fall right into your normal routine. You got it down so patented that you're going to just fall right into that same new normal routine about talking about illnesses and then trying to perform a custom, you know, no question, Carrie, no question. That's very true. So do practice it. My concept around the Jeff Allen approach, what I've been doing when I share with people is I give them the chart. When they get to looking at the product sheet, what the packs look like, that's when I say, well, this is what your pack will look like, but I am going to make one variation here because I'm going to add the phytonutrients that are so critical for your cancer. Or I will do that. So I actually customize. Now, I know that's a little different because of my knowledge and my background. I can't find myself denying my knowledge of what works. So I still customize it a little bit for each person versus what's in the Jeff Allen. But that's just because of how many years I've been in it. For a brand new person, they don't have that knowledge, so they don't do that. And that's fine. Just use the packs as they exist. But it is a training process. No question, Carrie. You gotta be in tune with it. So role playing is a great idea. Yeah. Well, Jeff Allen's approach to that was clear. He says when they look at the plans and they go, wow, that's a big price, you just be quiet. We have to learn how to be quiet. We have to learn not to sit there and start negotiating or giving them alternatives. Let them look at that sheet and make some decisions. Because what happens when you're just quiet, they'll look at the other plans and they might go, well, do you think I could just do the standard plan first and then when we get the money, move up to Challenger? And then you could say, sure. Whatever. But you let them make the decision. When you start getting into it, now you're selling packs again, and you're out of the pack business. You're empowering them to make the decision. I don't think that's part of anything in the Jeff Allen approach. It's you're empowering them. They decide, the flow chart decides, boom, you get down and you talk about what they're going to take based on the flow chart. That's the only health history you know, and you don't even know it. They're the ones that are making the assessment for themselves. Well, if somebody says that to me, if they say, boy, Mary Jo, I'm in Challenger because I'm in fourth stage cancer, so I need the Challenger pack. We get to the other side, I'll say, great, here's your pack, but this is what I'm doing. Because of the cancer that you've mentioned to me, I'm going to convert some of these products, and you're going to get more phytonutrients that is going to help support that. That's what I do. Okay? Okay. All right. Good questions, you guys. It's, you know, we'll keep eking these out each week because I really want to support you in doing this. All right, let's jump in and talk about our lesson today, which is make change your other best friend. And this is all about what we do with change. The word change. Some of you, the minute I mention the word, you start like squirming in your chair, and it makes you uncomfortable. Your blood pressure goes up. You get a little nervous. Your palms get sweaty because, you know, our world is kind of out there, and people just, I look at my husband, I have a perfect example of my own husband. My husband has such an adversity to change, I can't even fathom, you know. He lost his job one time in his entire life because the company went under, and I saw him go into depression in a state of total, you know, almost, I don't know. I didn't know who the guy was for the next 8 months, 9 months until he found another job, and then he took about a year to recover from that. But, you know, some people just have a tremendous adversity towards change. That's kind of almost a norm more than it is the other. I happen to be the opposite end of the realm. I just absolutely love change. In fact, I think everything that happens in our life, if I could change, it just brings new opportunities all the time. And so it's just a matter of how you look at change. And this whole chapter was on learn to love change, because change always presents opportunity, and it's about the way you look at it. If you look over the last 20 years, all of you can acknowledge the phenomenal amount of change we've gone through. Most of it related to technology changes. I mean, technology changes every day in our lives, and we see changes all the time, whether it's cell phones or fax machines or DVDs or whatever. I just listed a few things, but it also changes in our physical world. We talked about the Cold War. I mean, you know, some of you grew up in the era I did, Joe McCarthy era, and everything was about, you know, anti-red, you know, hating the Soviet Union. They were Russians, and they were going to destroy us and wipe us off the face of the earth. And today we don't even have a Soviet Union. I mean, so look at that dramatic change. And AIDS is another thing. We look at health changes. We didn't even know what AIDS didn't even exist 25 years ago. And today 70% of Africans have it, and plenty of people in this country suffer from it and all around the world. So we have all these things that we know the world changes constantly. That's one thing that change is about. We know it's a given that change is going to occur. So we need to learn how to use change to move us forward, not to stop us or put us into reverse because of it. Because we always know one thing for sure, change will occur. Now, the second thing I talked about was Socrates, because Socrates taught this in his classes, and this goes way back. Of course, some of you know Socrates, and I put a little chart on the back page. That's why you got a PDF file today, because there's only one way I could attach it to the outline, was to put it as a PDF. And I put two different charts there. And what Socrates did in his teaching is he taught that everything, no matter what it is, everything, every person, everything that exists on the earth goes through three stages. It goes through growth, stability, and change. And that was the philosophy that he taught. And then all of a sudden, one of his bright and wise pupils in one of his classes, his name was Plato, some of you may have heard of that name, said, oh, Sock, I don't agree with you. That's not the way things are. That in reality, we only have two stages in life. We're either in a growth stage or a decay stage. That stability, he basically said, if you're not growing, you're decaying. There is no such thing as stability. Stability is kind of an illusion that we have out there, because just when you think you're stable, change is going to occur and it's going to trigger growth or decay. So we are always in a stage of either growth or decay. So but the interesting thing is, so many of us run our lives and our big goal is, I want a stable, or I want to find financial stability. Well, what is financial stability? My gosh. Financial stability can be, you know, I have $100,000 in the bank. Great, you know. So I put it in a stock, and the stock goes out of the company, Enron, goes out of business. And how stable was the $100,000? Not very stable, because change occurs. So Stability implies safety and comfort, but if stability is nothing but an illusion, why do we have it as a goal in our lives? Why are we wishing for it, wanting for it? Our true, more meaningful goal should be is to focus on us remaining always in the growth phase. And that means, what are we doing in constantly, every day of our life? Look at the roles you play in your life. You're a spouse, you're a parent, you're a strong Christian, you're a man attacker, whatever those roles are, take all the roles you play in your life and say, okay, am I growing or decaying? Am I in a growth mode or decay mode? So every week of your life, and Covey's got a great one in his book that I love so much. He says, you know, you can do a weekly to-do list, but you also want to do a weekly to-be list, more importantly. Like, what are you doing and looking at every role you play in your life, and how are you contributing to that role? How are you growing in that role this week? What commitments are you doing to your beingness in that role? So I think it's a real neat thing to do, and all of you can do it. Where you are under 2C in the outline, I said, where are you right now in many areas of your life? Just start looking at it. I only listed 4 of them to give you an idea of what you can do. Your own analysis. Look at your Manatech business. Are you in a growth or are you in decay? What's happening in your Manatech business? Because there's not anyone on this call that'll ever tell me that there's stability in the Manatech business. You're either growing or you're decaying. And I've been in the business long enough to know that is absolutely true. I get people that get, you know, complacent with their Manatech business because they got builders and they just kind of watch their business grow and they say, oh, wow, look at these people are doing great. And then guess what happens? The complacency sets in and all of a sudden decay is inevitable. So you have to be actively involved and actively pursuing something greater. That's why I tell my people, my leaders, I see some of my executive directors on their way to presidential and they slow down or they stop prospecting and I go, what are you doing? You're decaying. You're going to create decay and deterioration in your downline. All of us, even myself, it doesn't matter what level you are in Manatech, we all need to be prospecting no matter what. And I think that's true about everyone because I truly believe if you're a leader, you need to be doing what you're asking your people to do. Otherwise, you're not setting an example for them. So we all need to be stepping out and continuing to prospect all the time. So is your Manatech business in growth or decay? Are you growing as a leader or are you decaying? Because if you're not putting time and energy around leadership trainings and leadership mechanisms and reading books, then you're decaying as a leader. So we need to choose growth as leaders because we never can stop growing. There's one thing that's absolutely true there. We can never stop growing. Is your health in growth or decay? Look at it that way. If you're not supporting your health, I look at my health and I'm in growth in my health. One of the ways we grow in health is what? We swallow Manatech products, we drink lots of water, we exercise. What commitment are you making around that? You stop exercising and you go a year with that and I'm going to tell you your body's decaying because you're not committed to a path that's going to help you continue your growth in terms of that health. And then also looking at your spiritual development. Are you growing or decaying in your spiritual walk? And this one has so much, oh my gosh, there's so many biblical truths here, it's not even funny. For those of you who are Christians, you can go back. I just did my Bible study, or my Sunday school class I teach is singles, and I did a big piece on Thessalonians this weekend, and it was just awesome how it talks about there. 1 Thessalonians, you can go start looking and talking about how it just delves into, you know, Paul talking to the Thessalonians saying, you know, you got to do more. I know what you're doing in brotherly love, but you have to do more. I know what you're doing for the Lord, but you have to do more. He constantly is saying, you know, it's not enough. You can't just get stable in your walk with the Lord. It doesn't work that way because what happens is we sign up for 2 or 3 things and all of a sudden we think we're in a godly walk and we go to Sunday school and we go to church on Sunday and we go to Wednesday night service and that's our church life. And I'm going to say it's that routine. You set up a Christian routine in your life, and you're going to start decaying because there's so much in the secular world that's going to continue to eat and attack you if you don't have a growing relationship or growing walk in your spiritual life. You're going to start decaying because there's too much that counterbalances. There's too much that we get. All you got to do is turn on the television, read a newspaper, you know, go out, and, you know, group friends and stuff. You're going to see what happens. There's deterioration around us everywhere because the secular world just has so much going on that can undercut the underpinnings of our spiritual development. So all of these areas, you're either in growth or decay, so what's your commitment around them? How are you committing to grow? And that's where we need to do. Stability is an illusion. where's your commitment to growth? Make the commitment in each of those areas of your life and see the remarkable effects you have in your life, because change is inevitable. Okay, what's most important about change is choosing your response to change. Now that we know that change is inevitable, that it's going to happen no matter we like it or not, and I don't think anyone would disagree with that on this phone, change is inevitable, we all need to recognize that our ability is to control our response to the change. We are all capable of controlling our response to change because we choose it. And there's a great book out there, Viktor Frankl wrote it, Man's Search for Meaning. And in that book, Viktor Frankl gave his account of his personal journey and discovery while he was in a Nazi concentration camp. And he found that even in the most horrific of all circumstances, he always had a choice on how he was going to respond to it. So clear that your response to change is always your choice. So just choose differently. Pick and choose differently. It doesn't mean it's easy. It just means it is your choice, always your choice. A typical response to change is what we see out there a lot, even in, especially in Manatech and doing network marketing, we choose fear. We choose fear. And I see that happen even when Manatech changes packs, and I get 25 emails. Wow, oh my gosh, rah, 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 and I see all this stuff. I'm like, oh my gosh. The anger and the fear and the frustration comes looming in. And I look at some of the changes that Manatech does too, and trust me, I look at them and I go, what are they doing now? And I kind of roll my eyes, but in the back of my head I said, okay, let's look at opportunity. What do we need to do here? And maybe we can go back and help make a change in the change. Just like all of you did in support of changing the increased cost on the shipping on the packs. I mean, look at all the changes that have been made since the first change was made, because we tried to go back and express an opinion and viewpoint about it to see if Manatech would reconsider. That's one way of impacting or looking at change. Instead of hitting the doldrums and getting angry and coming from fear, what is it going to do with the business? It's how do I support the company making a better decision, and then how do I make this an opportunity for us to move forward and get a better result? So look at change from that. Instead of fear, because if you really look at the two different ways that we respond to change, we can respond from fear or excitement, right? And if you look at the two different ways our body physically responds to fear, a bear comes running at you, or you just signed up 22 All-Stars in one weekend. Okay, we can respond. We can be excited, we can be fearful. We can choose excitement or fearful. But if you have those two emotional responses, excitement versus fear, your physical body responds almost the same. You have an exhilaration of the adrenal glands, your palms get sweaty, your breathing gets faster, your heartbeat goes up. If you just look at that in yourself, that our physical response with fear versus excitement are virtually identical. So what's the difference? It's purely how we view what is happening to us. It's your perspective, exactly. How we view what is happening to us. What perspective are you choosing? Isn't that incredible? It's just a perspective. So you might say, okay, change comes about. Fear tends to be a natural instinct in us when change occurs. But, you know, even if you have an immediate reaction of fear, just a second of fear enters your life, you can immediately choose different. Choose out of it and go to excitement. Choose out of it. So I'm not suggesting that sometimes when change hits your life that you're not going to have an immediate kind of, you know, oh my gosh, what's going to happen? But you can immediately resolve that, because, you know, that might be a natural instinct you have. But what you want to do is notice that in your life and immediately choose out of it. Get into the habit of choosing out of fear and stepping into excitement. Because fear is always based on what? Your picture of a negative outcome. That's what fear is. A bear starts running after you. Your fear is triggered by, you picture a negative outcome. He's going to eat me up alive. That's pretty negative. So, yeah, right. But fear is triggered because of a picture of a negative outcome. Most negative people, thus, will typically see fear. They will end in fear. When change occurs, they will end up in fear. Positive people, on the other hand, will see positive results and come from excitement and joy and anticipation. So it's just about what pictures do we put in our head? what perspective do we take around change? Are we going to take a positive, exhilarating effect, or are we going to take a fearful effect? And when I did C in the outline, I think it's 2C or 3C, are we? 3C. When we talk about options to respond to change, you have fear or excitement. If those are my two options, what happens down each path? And I think if you look at the last page, the PDF file, when I attached, I gave you the two paths to your choice of choosing excitement or choosing fear. If you choose fear, you right away go in attack and avoid mode. That's our typical reaction. Fear triggers attack and avoid. We either attack back or we avoid. We go into an avoidance system or we go into attack. And then attack and avoid leads to a natural decline or decay. And that's the change that occurs in our life. We decay based on it. Or we can choose excitement. If we choose excitement, it triggers what? Creativity and solutions, a growth, an opportunity. So you have both pathways are going to both result in change for you, but it's going to be your choice which direction it goes. And if you look in a trigger, if you choose fear, you're going to see that that's always a lose-lose for you. So choose excitement and allow your mind to open up to creativity and solutions versus choosing fear, which gets into an attack and avoid mode. And that's how we need to start looking at change in our life, is to go into a creativity and solution mode. I gave you, as came out of the book, how can we prepare for change properly? And there's helpful tips in the book, and I think they're terrific because some of you are still overwhelmed by change. And I think these tips really help you grapple with change because we know it's inevitable. So how do I prepare for it? Number one is create areas in your life that consist of very slow change or no change. Some of you, like your physical environment, some of you like to change your furniture in your house every other day. You're remodeling every other day. You're searching out for change. You're looking for something different. If you're like Mary Jo, I never change anything in my house. My house looks exactly the same every single day. I haven't changed my furniture for 13 years. It's just what it is. I have so much change in every other aspect of my life. I started looking at this, well, maybe that's why I don't enjoy changing my environment. Because when you add change to change to change, you're going to make yourself look out of control and you're going to feel out of control. So you need to have certain aspects of your life that you understand are either slow to change or no change so that you can withstand the change that you desperately want and are looking for in other areas of your life, like your business life, your financial life, your marriage life, all those things. Make your dedication of your energy around things that you really want to catapult instead of around moving furniture around the house. So just look at that. Are there areas of your life that you can slow down the change or stop the change so that you can withstand change in other areas of your life, which is more important? And then you don't have to feel out of control when change hits. A second tip is practice flexibility. I can't wait to give these tips to my husband, to tell you the truth. I was so excited about reading about them. I said, oh, I'm going to leave this on my husband's underneath his dinner plate tonight. practice flexibility. Push yourself to intentionally or actively try the unfamiliar. That means on your way to work, just take a different route. Start pushing yourself out of your box to do something different. And I know some of Clemmer's practices, like when he does some of his seminars, he tells people, okay, tomorrow you got to come back and you got to tell us something you did totally different that you'd never done before. And some people said, well, they talk about different things, putting their makeup on backwards or not wearing makeup at all, or, you know, I refuse to shampoo my hair today even though I always shampoo my hair. And it's really funny, people's reactions just to taking something in their personal life and just doing it different. And it's incredible how that really shocks people's systems. It puts them some people are totally uneasy with it. Other people, they do that every day because they don't have a routine. But the important thing is to put yourself in a practicing flexibility mode. Practice doing things that are intentionally, that are outside your familiar. And that's going to help you when change occurs to be able to be more flexible when it does happen, because we know it's going to happen. So, and then when things happen and change happens in your life, you just try to go with the flow. You usually become very anal about it, or you get caught up in it, or you get anxious about it. Hey, learn to go with the flow. Practice flexibility. A third tip is develop the art of surrender. I think this is a huge one for all of us in many ways, even especially when you're talking about Manatech business too. Develop the art of surrender. Instead of acting out of resistance when things occur, practice surrender. sometimes it is the best just to give way to your environment instead of fighting it or resisting it. What you resist tends to persist, so be careful on what you resist. This is very true, especially in instances where you're not sacrificing principles, because there are times where you don't want to surrender because it's something that's so core to you that you're not going to surrender, and we'll talk about that in a minute. But if it's just perhaps strategies in your life, you can easily sacrifice on those. Somebody might have a better idea than you have. Do any of you have people in your life that always seem to think their way is right, my way, or hit the highway? Am I the only one that has somebody in my life like that? Okay, good. I'm glad I do, because it's one of those people that it's really tough to deal with because they really can't do it any other way. I mean, and it gets to the point of being silly things. They're just not that important. Like my husband, I make chicken enchiladas, and if I don't make them from an absolute specific, you know, Monterey Jack jalapeno cheese, if he sees any other kind of cheese in there that's not from this name brand, he right away doesn't want to have the enchiladas. Does anyone deal with that? I mean, a brand. And you know what I do? I make them from a different brand every time I make them. I'm helping him practice flexibility. Do you get that? Now, you can say, Mary Jo, that's not very nice. You know, but I don't think it's, you know, it's so silly to be that, you know, totally entrenched that a brand difference can make all the difference in the world. I mean, it's because we know it's nonsense. Yeah, there could be some worse brands out there that don't melt, the cheese doesn't melt quite the same way or something, you know, but the absurdity of thinking there's only one way to make chicken enchiladas and it's with this special name brand Monterey Jack jalapeno cheese. I mean, craziness. We get so entrenched in our ways. And so you want to just, on issues like what kind of cheese is on the chicken enchiladas, really, is that so important? So that's what this developing an art of surrender is about. Don't, you know, learn to surrender to things that just aren't that important. You're going to have less anxiety, less stress. You won't die of a heart attack. You may, but it won't be from the kind of cheese you put on your chicken enchiladas. It's going to be from other things that happen in your life. But you look at what the difference in your life if you just learn to surrender. It's so important, so critical for us to develop that. And then the last tip was, of course, developing your spiritual relationship. Whatever that spirituality you're choosing into, and of course, I'm a born-again Christian, so mine's with God, and I just say, what an incredible thing for us to just step into our relationship with God, because if you have this relationship with a spiritual being, an infinite being that truly is in control of all of a sudden, when you start looking at the little stuff that happens in our secular world, how unimportant does it all look? When you're thinking about your relationship with your Creator. I mean, it just really puts a perspective on it that will release you from getting so caught up in change that happens with these little secular issues in our life. Why are we getting so tossed and so anxious around what little things in our secular world when our most important thing is our relationship with the Lord? I mean, that's really a way to look at it. And it really helps you develop a better perspective around change, is having a stronger spiritual relationship. Okay, so those are four tips in our life. And of course, acknowledging that spiritual relationship. Some of you have strong spiritual relationships, but you still have this crazy stuff around change because we forget when change happens. Just go to God. Put it at His feet. Get out of it. It's not about you. Remove yourself from the realm of it. Quit thinking about you. Quit focusing on you and start focusing on the bigger picture. All right, the next step in the outline, we talk about evaluating change. And, you know, every time change occurs in your life, you need to evaluate it. You got to look at, what is it going to take? Is the change so pervasive that I better jump onto it or I'm going to totally miss the boat? You know, because some people that don't jump onto certain changes in their life, they really miss a boat. I think the computer era is one of those changes. And we still have people out there, and some of you might even be on the call. I have people in my Manatech business that still don't have computers. But I can guarantee them that they're never going to be as effective as somebody that has a computer, because it's so hard to do this business without Success Tracker and all the other tools that come by use of a computer. I mean, you really are impairing your ability to proceed by not stepping into the computer arena. But we still have people who have adversity to it. Those kind of changes in our life, we need to just understand this is a major change. This is about, I need an entire new boat. I don't just need to write the boat. So it's important to evaluate it to see, is it something so critical that I really need to jump on board with it, or is it something that I can just let it ride and see what happens, and it's not important for me to necessarily take immediate action with? And that's so you need to evaluate change. You have to evaluate it when it happens. You also need to evaluate whether change impacts your core principles or it's just a strategy. A lot of us don't even do enough analysis about what our core principles are, or core belief systems, to even come from this. But I'm going to tell you, if you do core analysis and you do enough core analysis study about who you are, what's your basic value system in life, what are the things most crucial and most critical for you, when you get that core down really pat, then when change occurs, you can evaluate everything from that core. So it becomes very simple for us to evaluate what changes we're willing to do, what changes we're not willing to do, because they're inconsistent with our core. And that makes life so much simpler, because I really watch people out there in the world today, and I see them, and I have friends who fit this perfectly, is because they're not really centered, grounded on their core values. Every time some change occurs, they're like a blade of grass. They just blow in the wind. The wind blows right, they go right. The wind blows left, they go left. The wind, it doesn't matter. And they just don't stay true to their core. So it's important to make sure that, you know, you get your core principles, so you're not going to let changes occur to those core that are going to impact those core principles. And the third thing in evaluating change is asking the question, are you going to remember this change in 5 years? You want to look at the risk-rewards ratio. If it's important, then change. If it's not, if you're not going to remember it in 5 years, then don't waste your time on it. Save your energy and focus on something else. So really do an analysis of what it really means. Is this a meaningful change or not a meaningful change? What's going on here? And why am I spinning my wheels and spending so much time and energy on something that has so little value in terms of long-term? Okay, risk-rewards ratio to figure that out. So the bottom line is this. I'm going to ask all of you on the call, what are you? Start doing some self-analysis, and we'll talk about this after we get done here. I ask you the question, if boiling water is change, just as an analogy, we're saying boiling water is change, okay? So it signifies change. Are you the carrot, the egg, or the coffee? The carrot in boiling water ends up as a limpy vegetable. It starts out acting tough. It's people who start out tough, but when challenges and changes come along in their life, they soften up and fail to stand up for themselves. You got the analogy? Carrot, hard, the boiling water's changed. They start limping out and gimping out, and they fail to stand up for themselves. The egg turns hard in the middle. These are people who confront challenges, but they come out very calloused and very hard inside and quit relating and connecting to people because of it. In other words, change, they'll confront it, but when the change is complete, they've probably burned 20 bridges out there with people that used to be friends of theirs that no longer are in their lives because they become calloused and hard in the fight. And then the coffee completely changes the water. You put coffee in boiling water, and guess what? These people love changes and challenges. Coffee embraces it. They embrace challenges. They embrace changes. They take them on as new opportunities, creating new things, riding the wave. They find the opportunity in change and make it work for them. So what are you, a carrot, an egg, or are you coffee? Where do you fit in that realm? Got it? Great. Okay, people, that's it. That's the lesson for today. Great concept. Anybody want some comments about what they kind of saw in themselves as we went through this? Any commentary about change in your life and how you deal with it? Mm-hmm. You probably drove them crazy. Uh-huh. Yeah, isn't that great? Perfect. Love it. Who else? Hi, Lindsay. Uh-huh. Right? Right. Right. Great. To make it, there you are. Uh-huh. Great. Yeah, got it. Well, I'll suggest to you that you're going to see a shift in that if you jump in with both feet in Manitech. But that's okay. It's good because there's a big change. Yeah, great. Right. Great. Great, great. Well, welcome aboard. Yeah, good, good. Well, there's, yep, you bet. You betcha. Okay. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Yeah, well, and how about this for excitement? I think about when if a bear's chasing me, of course, I'm going to have fear. I don't think anyone in this phone call wouldn't have a little bit of fear about a bear chasing them. Of course, the one thing you're supposed to do is not run, I guess. That's what somebody told me. Don't run. And I go, oh, yeah, just let them eat you right there. But the concept of thinking about somehow maybe this story is going to be a phenomenal story, because it's going to create such a great testimonial. Or somebody might think, oh my gosh, I can't wait till I run him into the pit so that I can have the bear skin for my rug on my floor because I'm so desperate out here that I need warmth. Or all the benefits. Or I'm starving to death and I need food and this is my source of food that God's presented me in my life. I mean, there could be 100 ways of, you see how you can take almost any situation and convert it to something positive. And it's really what our life should be. Yeah. Great, good, great aha. Aren't they critical factors, though? Isn't it, you know, really? I got it. Right, yeah, right. It's like, okay, so maybe this is, and I'm not saying this is you, but I know a lot of people that love to change their furniture every other day, but they're not growing their Manitech business. Whoops, I got the change happening in the wrong area. Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah. There you go. Wrong area. That's yeah. Yeah, hi Joe. Absolute. Great. You betcha, yeah. Uh-huh. Yes, you do need to throw those business cards out, and you need to start off with a business card. If you you can't mix glycoscience.org with GlycoStory. You can't put those cards on the same. You want to isolate that, okay? Okay, yeah. So, or Socrates and Plato. You're decaying, isn't it? Yeah. Absolute. Absolute. Choose differently. Just like in, I had that problem in my marriage. I was, you know, I'm on a mastermind call because I love masterminding, and I got a part of a group about a year ago, and they've just, it's been huge, the impact on my life in so many areas. And one of them was my marriage. They were kind of giving, my mastermind partners were giving me a bunch of, you know, they were just saying, Mary Jo, everything in your life is like at a 10, and your marriage is like about a 6 in comparison. And I said, I have a great marriage. I love my husband. He's just very different from me. And they go, well, what are you doing about it? He won't go on trips with you. He won't go to take the incentive trips. He doesn't do that, you know, because my husband hates, he hates adventure. He doesn't have adventuresome spirit anywhere. So we were on and on and on. And I said, okay, okay. And they kept giving me such a hard time. So I went out and I heard about these marriage tapes. And I said, well, why not get, you know, Dr. Benson, he's a fellow at Denton Bible Church who put together this incredible set of marriage tapes. So I said, okay, great. So I got my husband, and very hard, trust me, it was very hard to get him to start listening to him because he's very adverse to change. And he right away thinks, you know, is something wrong in our marriage that you want to listen to tapes? You know, I go, no, why can't we enhance something we already have? Well, unbelievable. We went through this marriage tape series. My husband's now committed to going to presidential trip to Hawaii with me in January, and our marriage has like gone from a 6 to about a 9 in 4 or 5 months. I'm not totally different guy. Totally different guy. And why is that? Because I was willing to make a difference. I was willing to change, step into it. I was willing to say, hey, if we're not growing in this marriage, what's the issue? We got to start growing again. Just because we've been married 20, 15, 20 years or whatever it is, don't stop growing. Did I hear that something happened?